Well, this month marks the 70th anniversary of the invasion of Alaska by Japan. The history books sometimes leave this out, but it lives deeply in the heritage of this state. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. We are talking about the Alaska Territorial Guard today. And we welcome anyone with memories of it or relatives of ATG veterans to join us at 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. We're trying to probe the living memory of the war that formed our state on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
So the United States went to war with Japan in 1941 after the bombing of Pearl Harbor was in December of 1941. So that would have been something over 70 years ago. Come that spring, action picked up. We had the Battle of Midway, which is well etched in the history books for sure because it was the destruction of the Japanese fleet. But right around the same time, we had the bombing of Dutch Harbor and the invasion occupation of Kiska and Attu by the Japanese Army, and they were not displaced from there for a year. Well, you have to look at not so much the map as the globe to start to get a picture and see just how far Midway is from the curve of the Aleutian Islands and begin to realize that from a strategic point of view, Alaska was important in the Second World War, and might have been far more important. There were those who realized that. The military presence in the state was rapidly beefed up in the 1940s. Ernest Greening was the territorial governor at the time. He was somewhat of a chum of Franklin Roosevelt, and he was constantly trying to persuade the military brass to do more about Alaska. And so, over time, they did. Most notably, the airstrips they built, Ladd Field and the others, to move aircraft to Germany across the Arctic. But beyond that, also, a large presence in the Aleutian Islands. And that base, as we talked about, there was a base at Kodiak and that big base at Dutch Harbor. So then suddenly, Alaskan soil is occupied, and it's realized what's going to happen out on the coast, and that's where the Territorial Guard comes in. Essentially, Muktuk Marston, Major Marvin Marston, decided to recruit those who were not of draft age to serve anyway in this Territorial Guard, and he did. And there were thousands of them. There was like 6,000 of them. And so that's our subject today. This all was 70 years ago, almost 70 years ago. And so obviously there aren't that many remaining Territorial Guard members. But fortunately we have some because the fact of the matter is some of them were really young. The one we'll hear from in a little while, Harold Barr, was only 11 when he was signed up in the Territorial Guard. But they were guarding Alaska's coast. And then they remembered, of course, young people that they were, and some were women, not just men. There were 20-odd women in the Territorial Guard. But by and large, the rest of the world forgot them until recently. And then, I think largely through the efforts of Ted Stevens, but others as well, it was finally dawned on Congress that they needed to recognize the accomplishments of these soldiers in the Territorial Guard, and they did. They were always volunteers. They were never paid. They got guns, and that was about it. But they were recognized. Their accomplishments were recognized, and they were discharged. Not everybody has received their discharges, however. Mercedes Angerman is the Alaska Territorial Guard Program Coordinator at the Alaska Office of Military and Veterans Affairs. Mercedes, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve.
So if there's somebody listening right now who had a relative in the Territorial Guard and they don't know if they got their discharge or not, what do? They get in touch with you? Are you the person?
Yeah, certainly they can get in touch with me directly via phone or email through the internet. But we also have placed on our website, it's at atg.alaska.gov, a listing of all of the official roster of the members of the Alaska Territorial Guard. We have two listings on that website right now. One is listing by last name alphabetically. And those spellings can vary. So when people are looking for a loved one, perhaps the spellings might be a little bit different because these rosters were originally rolled into a typewriter back in the 40s. And so there's been some things that might have been lost in translation.
So was that you that actually had to do all the entry to get all those into the website?
Part of it. But there's been a group of people over the last 12 years that have been involved in this process and compiling this. And I'm kind of on the final end and the final push of that. Another list on there is listed by community in which they were enrolled in the ATG at the time. So if somebody knows they had a relative that joined the ATG and they were in Kotzebue, they can go directly to the Kotzebue, look for that name. But we've also found during this process that some of these people moved around. We've found the same names in one location and another location. And sometimes we can discern if it's the same person or not, but sometimes it's just they're different people with the same name.
Yeah, and then you got some that went to active duty.
Absolutely.
In Korea or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's what Harold did, you know.
He
kind of liked the idea of becoming a sailor. So
yeah, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So yeah, I could see. And you brought your boss along, Verdi Bowen, Director of the Alaska Office of Military and Veterans Affairs. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's the first time, and I'm so glad to have you. So one of the things, I mean, first off, we have all the 70th anniversary stuff that's going on. But also, more particularly, in Bethel, they're making a Territorial Guard park. And I understand you're going to be going out there in early July?
Yes, on the 3rd of July, we'll go out and start the beginning of the dedications of that park. And in that park, they'll take the last Alaska Territorial Guard statue that has not been placed and place it on a monument. And at the base of it, they're going to put the names of all of the ATG members that served in those communities around the Bethel area.
And joining us by telephone from Bethel is Dave Trantum, Jr. Dave, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve, for having me on.
And Dave, you're an active volunteer. You're a little bit too young to have actually served, as I understand.
I did not live in Alaska during the Territorial Guard days.
But you've gotten yourself all wrapped up in this project.
I'm a volunteer to honor these folks that served during World War II.
So maybe you can give us a progress report. As I understand, it's going to be a work in progress, and one of the things you're asking people to do is provide rocks, because Bethel is short on rocks.
That is correct, Steve. The piling for the statue is driven. The statue will be mounted this week. We're building 31 planter boxes so people can plant flowers in them. We're building a picnic area and a parking area and a wall of honor. And later on, we will be putting up plaques to honor the 1,300 members that served during World War II, served their country, defending their country from the Japanese. And this, please understand, this is a work in progress. It's going to take us 2 years. The city of Bethel donated approximately 2 acres of land for this memorial park. and it will probably, we'll be working on it for the next 2 years. Does that brief you enough?
No, I want to know about the rocks.
About the rocks. We will use the rocks for borders, for walking trails. We will build up to 2,000 feet of walking trails. And we invite people from all over the state to send us some rocks. Did you get my press release, Steve?
I did.
Okay. We've put out that press release. So far, we haven't received very many rocks. So when you come out to Bethel, bring us a 25-pound of small rocks in your luggage, and I hope you can get through security with rocks. Thank you.
And they can be mailed, yes?
They can be mailed. They can be sent by dog team or horse if you have a horse.
Can you? I don't know how it would get to Bethel on a horse.
That's my joke of the day.
Okay. David, it's so great to have you with us, and I want to thank you for suggesting this as a subject for the show. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. And we're talking specifically about the Alaska Territorial Guard. And we would be honored to hear from anyone who had a relative who served or anyone who served themselves, getting on up in years. But, you know, we would love to have you on the show. The number, once again, is 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. We broached this subject some years ago with a young fiction writer whose first novel had come out, and the subject was Japanese balloons, because it turned out that there was this effort in Japan. There was quite a the whole way that the Japanese empire, as they called it at the time, motivated people was extremely interesting. And one of the things that they did is they urged families to make paper envelopes for balloons in their kitchens. Whole families would fabricate these balloons made of paper. And then the Japanese military had these mechanisms that they would put underneath the balloons that would actually be triggered by barometric pressure and so forth to keep heating the air in the balloons up, and they would float these things, often with bombs attached, all the way across the Pacific Ocean. And all of this, and much about the Alaska campaign, was top secret and was not revealed to the American people till years later. So these bombs, many of them showed up in Alaska, a lot of them showed up in British Columbia, and it hardly ever got in the news. And when it did get in the news, the military would send out this squad to stop press accounts from appearing because they didn't want panic spread in the population, because it turned out these things worked. The Japanese could actually launch these balloons, a simple hot air balloon made in some family's kitchen, and it would go all the way across the Pacific and blow up whenever it hit something. It would blow up, and they caused forest fires and so forth, and a number of them landed in Alaska. As a matter of fact, there is the mechanism from one of these in the back room of the Alaska Museum in Juneau, as we found out, because they called up during that show and said, yeah, we got the whole mechanism. If people want to see what it looks like, they have to ask. Now they've expanded the museum, so hopefully they've been able to put this thing on display. But, Dave, I guess, you know, Territorial Guard members have said that they would see these balloons. They would find these balloons and report them.
That is correct, Steve. And the Alaska Territorial Guard member went out and collected these balloons with explosives, and some were also weather carrying weather instruments of some kind. Unfortunately, we do not have any in this area to show or display.
Well, I want to play now this interview segment. This is from the Veterans Spotlight, which Senator Lisa Murkowski is doing now, and in cooperation with the Library of Congress. And to kick it off on Memorial Day, she started with Alaska Territorial Guard veteran Harold Barr, who I believe lives in Nome now. And they brought him into the studio and did an interview with him. And he talked about all of his military experience. But the first part of it, he talked about being in the Territorial Guard starting at the age of 11. And this is very interesting, the way that he characterizes the Japanese and the atmosphere at the time. And this is a living memory you're going to hear now from Harold Barr.
In the ATG, it was a guerrilla warfare. They just gave us a white blanket with snow, and they were not in uniforms, you know. The only thing they gave is the guns and ammunition and some food, but no pay, you know. Nobody ever asked for any pay, you know. They were just proud to serve. It's 11 years old. And so they issued those Enfield rifles, World War I. They were outmoded, and it had a peep sight. And I was used to see, I had a 22, I shoot six times, single shot, peep sight. I was so shocked, I had that same peep sight. And that's why Morrison said all the natives issued those rifles were sharpshooters. You couldn't miss with that thing. The Japanese, you know, they were the friends of the Eskimos. They came here right before the war started, because Eskimos ate the same thing did, the seals and the walruses, and they liked them, you know. And they thought that when the war started, they thought they would overrun it, and they thought the Eskimos would join them because they're so sure. The Japanese had fooled the intelligence, because they figured Nome was next. Japanese airplanes would be flying over every night. And so I used to get that Enfield, go in the attic, and just hoping to get low enough so I could take a shot at them.
Boy, it really brings it back. And so he describes a time when aircraft, when Japanese were on the shores, talking with the local people. Most of this is not in the history books, Purdy.
That is correct, and a lot of the Alaska Territorial Guard members remember seeing the Japanese on the beaches doing surveys. I remember speaking to someone in Quiglinoc, and he was telling me that he had seen the Japanese planes fly over, and they were also responsible for shooting down one of the balloons that you had discussed earlier. And he said they had shot one down, and then they sent it off to the Army. And that's been a couple of years ago that I had that discussion. But I also remember the fear on his face when he discussed seeing the aircraft with the red ball on the back. That's what he called it, was the red ball on the back. He said how scary it was, because all they had was the rifles.
You know, among the things in your duties as the Veterans Affairs, you have to stand up for veterans, I'm sure, which is probably stressful. And you have to go to a lot of funerals. Oh. This must be one of the more enjoyable parts of your job.
Well, in reality, this is, because recreating history it isn't really recreating history. Getting their story told is probably the most important part. The saddest thing in the world, there's two sad things to me in the world, is that if you serve in the United States military and you do not have a record in the National Archives, that's not right. We need to correct that iniquity. And the next thing is to be buried without a headstone. And we still have a long ways to go to make sure that all of our veterans are covered properly. Because once you serve, once you stand up and say that you will serve, then we as a nation have an obligation to make sure that that recognition is forever.
I was shocked, Mercedes, to see that there were 6,378 members of the Territorial Guard.
Yes, sir. And officially right now on the roster is about 6,413. And of those, there's been approximately 1,200 discharges, official United States Army discharges issued. I've recently gone through another 500 names in research, so you have to kind of put on a detective hat in a lot of this work to push to get more of those official discharges that Verdi spoke of officially on record. It'll be files with the United States Army as well as in our offices to ensure that they get what they deserve.
You're just one person.
Yes, sir. Yeah. It's a task, but it is a rewarding task as well.
So, but you really need all the help and support and information you can get, I would think. Mm-hmm. I don't think email would be a good way for people to get in touch with you.
Pardon me?
Email would be a good way.
Absolutely, email. Uh-huh. And from that website that I had mentioned earlier, atg.alaska.gov, my email address is located there as well. And that's probably the best, because when people, you know, find a name of a loved one, or maybe they're still a living ATG member, we've been really trying to capture those that might still be alive. And we have actually done quite a few of those recently. Just over Memorial Day, we were out in Bethel, and there were four members of the ATG that were honored out there that are still living. And so that's really a gratifying. But an application does need to be submitted on behalf of anybody that wants to get that official discharge. And those listings on the website do indicate also if a person has received a discharge yet or not. So somebody will be able to tell if there's one on record yet.
Let's go to Gene, joins the program from Wasilla. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Gene.
Oh, hi, Steve. Great to be on. I'd like to address a couple of things in about books people might like to read about this. I haven't read them, it's been many years since I read them. I should go back and reread them, but one of them is Muktuk Marson's book.
Oh, it's hilarious. It may not be all that accurate, but by golly, what a yarn.
Oh, yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Somebody
yeah,
needs to republish that thing. I don't think it's, you know, you still have to go back to the collector's items to get it.
I think one of the most wonderful points in that book was how he had to fight the top brass to actually do that.
Yeah, well, he was the guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was good. And then,
well, as near as I can tell, you know, that, you know, Buckner gave him quite a lot of rope. I mean, he had a really vague title, like special assistant or, you know, in charge of special projects or something like that. They kind of didn't mess with Muktuk. They kind of let him do what he wanted. Major Marston.
Well, conjunction with that is, you know, Ernest Greening's Many Battles book, and he covers that. He covers his relationship with Muktuk in that too. Have you read that, Steve?
No, I haven't read that. I've only read it quoted in Klaus Nasky's book. You get the same problem with Greening. Sometimes he saw history in his own particular way.
Well, don't we all?
Yeah, we do. I mean, that's kind of the point of memoirs anyway, right?
Yeah. Then the second point I think that needs to be made today is that I would like to make is that there was actually at the time at Muktuk, I'd really like to see an in-depth study on this, but there were a lot of top brass that didn't want to give guns to the natives, you know, and they were actually... those are different times then, and we can't gloss over some of that stuff. I think it has to be brought out a little bit of how persistent Muktuk was and how truly patriotic the natives were.
Right, and I don't think, those stories that he writes about that in his book, I don't think he was making that stuff up.
That was quite the battle to get the guns out to them and the ammunition and then a wonderful point Greening brings up in his book is that on the proficiency with the with the weapons, that was better than any of the normal services with the American troops.
I totally believe that. I mean, no comparison. Some hillbilly popping groundhogs and some guy trying to hunt a seal. I mean, if you've been out with a seal hunter, that ain't. You got to be real good to do that.
Yeah, I think they knew how to make every single shot count.
Yeah.
It was a pretty valuable bullet for the natives.
You betcha. Well, so long as you brought that up, Gene, I'll throw in a few others here. Galen Paris, who I'll talk about in a few minutes, a Canadian historian, wrote one called Stepping Stones to Nowhere. And he goes into some of the strategic questions about that. And as you might imagine, with a book entitled Stepping Stones to Nowhere, he doesn't think all that much of the Aleutians campaign. Interesting, he was tied up today. He said he'd love to be on the show sometime. He was tied up today. He just couldn't do it. We also couldn't get Klaus Naske. He's just not feeling well enough to do it. And with all the other historians, we couldn't get. John Klo is your official military historian of Alaska and has written some great stuff. Brian Garfield's book, of course, The Thousand Mile War. Definitely one you need to read. And those are the big ones I know about. So thanks for that, Gene.
Oh, okay, thanks for having me on the show, Steve. Thanks.
Yeah, and we had a suggestion here about those rocks, Dave Trantum. Somebody pointing out, caller and Homer, Chris, said, hey, you know, they have those flat rate box now that the post office has got, so there's no reason you can't put rocks in there. You might have to pad
Steve,
them a little bit.
Our post office box number is 3049 Bethel.
thank you ever so much. It is Talk Alaska. We're talking about the Territorial Guard. We've got our Office of Military and Veterans Affairs Director here, Verdi Broen. We've got Mercedes Angerman. She's the person who actually goes through and documents for official discharges, the Territorial Guard members, and Dave Trantum, who's a volunteer, who is marshaling the forces to get the memorial together out there in Bethel, the ATG Memorial Park Planning Group. And they got a capital grant this year from the legislature, and they got the city of Bethel to donate the land. They have the piling in there, and the statue itself, the last of the statues that hasn't been put up, is supposed to be going up this week, and then the dedication coming up at the 3rd of July. And let's go to Lou, joins the program from Ketchikan. Lou, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, good morning. My brother-in-law is from Nunavak, and his father was in the Territorial Guard, and I'm trying to track him down so he'll call in. But just a couple of things on these balloon bombs. If you want to read a fascinating story about how they located the factory and destroyed the launching site, there's a book called The Control of Nature, and it's by John McPhee, who wrote Coming to Alaska. And it's the story of how they used a geology and a geologist to inspect the ballast sandbags. And he had experience in Japan, and he helped them locate the beach where they were launching the balloons, and they later bombed it. And that ended the balloon bomb threat.
Wow, that is something.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story, and again, the book is The Control of Nature. And one other small tidbit, my mother was in the Seattle Central Phone Exchange when they announced that the Japanese had invaded, bombed and attacked Dutch Harbor, and people had so little knowledge of where Alaska was that many of the radio telephone operators ran screaming from the building, not knowing that Alaska was still quite a long ways away. So
it's a little ways up the coast.
Yeah. So even a city that had so much connection with Alaska, people didn't have the foggiest idea how close or far away it was. Great show. Thanks a lot.
All right, Lou. Well, thank you so much for your call, and keep trying to get that ATG veteran to give us a call. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the Alaska Territorial Guard and, in general, the shaping of Alaska by World War II. Not just the urban, but the rural. It was a huge force. We had thousands of people in the ATG, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. Someone you know is likely a trust beneficiary, a family member, friend, coworker, neighbor, maybe you. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority supports a statewide system of care for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, chronic alcoholism and substance abuse, Alzheimer's, and traumatic brain injury. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, here for all Alaskans, mhtrust.org.
It's Talk of Alaska, and the subject is the World War II influence on the state of Alaska. It was huge. Alaska was also important in the war. And with us is Verdi Bowen, director of the Alaska Office of Military and Veterans Affairs. And we kind of been centering the discussion on the Alaska Territorial Guard. And you were making a good point during the break there, Verdi, that, why would some military brass in Washington have the faintest idea of the skills of an Alaska native?
Well, they wouldn't, and that's and the reason why, if you look at Major Marston and his ability to integrate with the Alaska Natives and bring them into an active force, it was because of his experiences in Canada prior to joining the service. He was used to remote areas, especially across, I guess you would say, the frozen areas of the north, and he understood what it took to get people to volunteer to do different things. And he also understood their heart condition. And even though it's 70 years since the war, we still sort of, if you look at us here in Alaska, most Alaskans will look at the lower 48 and say, these people really don't understand us.
And you're right.
nothing has really changed in that aspect, you know. It's not often that you'll bring someone from Washington, D.C. up here and take them to rural or remote Alaska. And they don't fathom the $9 and $10 a gallon for gasoline or the $9 and $10 a gallon for milk. So it's something that they just quite don't grasp. And it tends to linger from 70 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I just posted on Facebook to all my various family members and so forth, well, there's no road to Alaska right now. Unless they couldn't believe it. It washed out.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It is hard for people to get their arms around it. And the military strategists really couldn't. I mean, in some ways, the Japanese really understood Alaska better than the military brass.
I think it was because they actually spent time with the locals along the beaches and stuff as they came over and were whaling and trading fish.
We're friends. We're right. Your friends. We eat the same as you do.
I think that's what they thought, but I don't think they realized.
They really thought that this was going to work.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that they thought that the loyalty of the locals were excited about being part of America, and they were part of being American citizens. And so when they were asked to volunteer to defend this country, they stood up without question. And I remember reading in one of the documents that we had is that Marston and the other one, I think his name was Captain Schreiber, that did the other side of the state, they had 100% volunteers every city and community that they went to. And even in today's world, I mean, that would be hard to reach. But at that time, they had 100% no matter where they went.
Wow. It is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the Alaska Territorial Guard in Bethel on the 3rd of July. The day before the 4th of July, they're going to dedicate an ATG memorial park and do with the plaque and all that. And they're looking for rocks, and a number of people made inquiries about the rocks. So, Dave Trantum, give us that box number again there.
That's box 3049, Bethel, 99559, if they wish to send them by mail. Small rocks, 2 to 6 inches in diameter.
All right. Well, so tell me a little bit more about what you're going to have happen on the 3rd.
On the 3rd of July from 3 to 5:30, there will be a potluck, community-wide potluck for anyone that's present. Bring a dish type, and it will be sponsored by the Native Tribe, ONC, of Bethel. And from 6 to 9, there will be a reception at the Cultural Center. And at 7 p.m., there will be a short dedication at the park. And as long as everybody understands this is a two-year project, and it will be completed, guaranteed. There is a group of 8 of us that's planning and devoting a lot of time to this park. There's a total of 8.
Well, that's a good sizable committee.
And there will be 8 people from ONC coordinating the potluck, and 8 descendants of ATG members will be hosting the reception.
Wonderful. Let's go to Dawn, joins the program from Denali Park. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dawn.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you. I had opportunity a couple years ago at the Balloon Museum in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to see an exhibit on the balloons that you were talking about that Japan used during World War II.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating exhibit. It was in part done by... a main component of it came from the young women who are now older women who were the conscripts, and they were actually brought into the different islands in Japan to build those balloons.
Oh, and so it wasn't really people building them in their kitchens, huh?
No, it was students that were brought over to the islands, some of the far off islands down there to build these, and then they were set off. And they were identified to be set up on the jet stream. And one of the reasons, per the exhibit, it talked about that the U.S. covered it up is because they did not want Japan to know that their endeavors were actually successful. So they didn't want it to be made noted on this side of the continent that these things were actually landing. And there was evidently a deaths of 6 young children in Oregon, and the woman who was the Japanese woman who was part of this exhibit and helped launch it, you know, they all expressed their extreme grief finding out later on what these things were being used for, and to find out that they were part of the war effort. But the exhibit was really amazing in that it actually had photos from the islands and the people with the gas masks and things like that, along with her renditions of what she remembers seeing when they were living in these camps.
And where was this? Where did you see this, Dawn?
It was at the Balloon Museum in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was in 2010.
Oh, wow. But a temporary exhibition?
It was. It was at that time, but it was.
Well, did it come out of? Yeah, did it come out of Japan? Or I'm just wondering if people could still see this somewhere.
You know, I suspect it is probably set up somehow. So it was at the Balloon Museum. Just in line with all of the balloons, and I'm guessing if we were to Google it, we might be able to come up with some information. I haven't done that yet. But when you started talking about it today, I was just fascinated because I had a chance to see that, and the hand. Making of those balloons out of paper was just a fascinating bit of information on how they were able to accomplish that with the ballast elements that were on the balloons and due to drop and what eventually launched the explosives. It was as the balloons came down, you talked about the barometric pressure being that which would cause it to explode. In some instances, the things actually just landed, and it was the children who had found it and started playing with it that then caused it to explode, and that's how 6 of them had been killed.
You know, I didn't hear about that. I did hear about one person who died in a forest fire that was caused by them, and that was all covered up by the military, but this is the first I heard about the whole group of children. That's really bad. bad.
So amazing, you know, for the Japanese, just getting it on the jet stream was their intention, to get it up and move it out along the jet stream. So there was a specific island that they knew that the jet stream went right over, and that's where they launched them from.
Wow. Thanks, Dawn.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling. Susie chimed in with this one. I had a friend who served with the Army in Fairbanks in the 70s, very interested in military history, and he told me that there was a problem in the Red Scare era with people down south worried about the fact that Alaska Natives often had family in the Soviet Union. That's true. Someone did some research and came up with the statistics that these natives were so not communist that the rate of enlistment was higher between the Territorial Guard and the Army directly than any other recognizable group of the American population. Sadly, it's been long enough that I don't remember the exact statistic, but perhaps one of your listeners will. Thanks, Susie, for that. Yeah, we do have, Verdi, we have a huge rate of military service here, Alaska Natives.
With the natives in Alaska, they are actually the largest number. I don't know what the percentage is, but if you just look at the Alaska National Guard per se, the majority of the Alaska National Guard is Alaska Natives, and so you can't say that they don't contribute at all. Since the Territorial Guard days till now, it is a very large number. Now, what I found was really interesting is I traveled in the interior of Alaska. Further is from the coast, you'll find a lot of the people that are living there are either retired or have served in the Navy. And I thought that was interesting. You'd always think because, you know, we have the Army and the Air Force presence here, but a lot of the gentlemen and ladies have served in the Navy. So it's I don't think that there's any specific service that is not covered by someone that's from Alaska.
I'm thinking these men in particular who perhaps women too, but I'm thinking definitely of the men, recruited in their teens into McTuck Marston's army. And think about it, it wasn't really all that long until the war was over.
Right.
And maybe they look back on it and say, wait, that was so much fun, but not a big deal. And they don't really want. Do you get that, Mercedes, that some of these people just said they're not really interested in being recognized for it?
Well, I wouldn't say that I've heard that necessarily. You know, there have been instances where, you know, applications have been given to people that, you know, this is the process, fill out the application, and this is what happens in return. And those applications never come back.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason. I don't know what that reason is. But mostly people are just really excited about it. And I usually have no trouble getting the information from either an ATG member or their family members.
Yeah. Well, I know my dad is a World War II veteran, and he had really mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, it's the biggest thing that ever happened in his life, and that came to dominate his thinking, especially in his later years. On the other hand, he was wounded in action. He was a tail gunner. He had a piece of flak come up there and mash up his whole backside, and he had a Purple Heart, and he didn't think he deserved it. It was the damnedest thing. He thought, well, these other guys, my buddies, are almost all dead. He says, what is this? This is nothing. And he would not wear it in the Memorial Day parade or anything like that.
That actually is a problem we have. It's actually across our nation with all of our military members. Most of them practice the act of selfless service. They don't do it for accolades, and they don't do it for anything else. They do it because they believe that there's a greater good. And there was a statement that was said to me once when I first joined the military, and it's, you know, life is not about yourself. It's about those you affect. And if you just watch the military, even today, even over the last 70 years, that aspect has never changed. If they are a hero or have received a lot of awards and medals, you generally don't know about it until after they have passed.
Yeah. Well, we finally succeeded in getting a Territorial Guard veteran to call up from Petersburg. Gerald joins the program. Welcome to Talk Alaska, Gerald. How are you doing today?
Doing fine. I just come from a walk up to the airport. I took some brownies up to the one air company up there, and I didn't have a cup of coffee, but I come back in time to get in on your program there, and I was shocked. There I was. You were talking about balloon bombs, and I got involved in that in that we were sent out. I was, first of all, I was in a Territorial Guard way back in high school. And we had to guard the gymnasium because the whole town was rotating, signed up people, women, kids, everything, to watch for planes on the top of the gymnasium. And we were outfitted with Enfield rifles and leg wrappings, even, the whole shebang. But I never heard back from one application that came about Territorial Guard. Anyway, after high school, I went into the service, and I wound up, after special training in Florida, I wound up out there at Attu on an air sea rescue, 10th Emergency Rescue Boat Squadron. And one afternoon, we got a call from Air One on Attu, and believe me, we were having a lot of air traffic, Navy PVs and B-25s and B-24s off of Shemya, and everybody thought there was nothing going on, but it was almost daily bomb runs to Permashiro. And yes, we did see a few Japs when I first got out there running around on the mountaintops. So they were the ones keeping track of everybody, including what we did. But anyway, one day we got this call from Air One, and it amounted to a secret. If we could get that thing, we were going to get a special commendation. And what was that thing? It was a balloon bomb that a P-38 had spotted and had followed for quite a while, and he'd was running out of gas. So we were sent out to see if we could find it. And there it was. I don't know, we were only 10 miles or so out in this air sea rescue boat. We could travel at 20 knots or more cruising. And this was an emergency, so we were pretty fast at the moment. Anyway, it was at about 1,500, 2,000 feet. I don't know. I can't remember that much. But here was this balloon bomb, and we started following it because it was moving at a pretty good pace. And I was a bosun at the time, and we followed and followed and followed, and finally we decided, the skipper and whatever he was talking to this, through the radio men, so I shot with the twin 50s just to see with the tracers. It's like hunting ducks. So anyway, I took one short burst, and damned if I didn't hit the bomb itself. So it blew up there in the sky, and we had about 2 hours after it landed in the ocean, the Bering Sea then. Anyway, it was so slimy, that was parchment, and when it got wet, it was just almost impossible. We had 2 and 3 guys in the water, and anyway, we only had a crew of 11 or 10 on the air sea rescue. Anyway, we never got a recommendation. We never got anything. It just, all we thought about is, well, it was damn lucky that we hit, or that we hit the bomb, because if we try to pull it alongside the boat, we're sitting on 3,000 gallons of high octane gasoline. So we thought we were pretty lucky that we got it. We thought, well, we'll hear something anyway. But we never did. It's kind of like the rest of our service out there. Nobody even has records of anything.
Right. Well, we're slowly trying to piece them together as best we can. Right, Mercedes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gerald, I want to thank you so much for your call from Petersburg. Were you're talking about the top of the gym. Was that in Petersburg?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Well, Gerald,
the whole town was blacked out, I can tell you that. Every window in town was blacked out, and a little box on top of the gymnasium. Everybody was signed up to rotate 24 hours a day.
And certainly,
as kids in high school, we were out practicing. I've got pictures of me in the backyard by the raspberries acting like a soldier with a bayonet a rifle in old Enfield.
And Gerald, if you could contact me directly, this is Mercedes Angerman with the Office of Veterans Affairs. I'd be more than happy to work with you to get you your official United States Army discharge for your service time.
I've been interviewed, and, you know, there's historians through our museum here and library.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I came in time. I like to talk of Alaska. It's wonderful. Anyway, I got about 10 minutes after, and that's the first thing I heard was this balloon bomb, and I thought, wow, somebody else saw him.
Well, you brought it alive in all of our imaginations there, Gerald. Thank you so much for your story there.
Okay.
Thank you, Gerald, Alaska Territorial Guard veteran calling us from Petersburg as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has over 70 job openings available statewide in nursing, social work, and child protection. There's nothing more important than protecting the health and well-being of Alaska families, so take the first step towards a meaningful career. Visit dhss.alaska.gov and click on Careers. Join their team and make a difference every day. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The subject today, World War II in Alaska and the Alaska Territorial Guard. And Mercedes Angerman, go ahead and give out your contact information again.
Yes, yeah, certainly. I'm here in Anchorage on Fort Richardson, J-Bear. 907, of course, 428-6513. That is my direct line. And anybody has any questions or needs applications, I want to find out status of applications, please call me at that number, 428-6513.
Let's go to Amy, joins the program from Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Amy.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I just thought I was enjoying your program, and I would share some experience that I had when I first came to the state. I arrived in Anchorage just planning to make a move from the East Coast, and decided it was a pretty exciting place to be. And somebody I met said, if you're trying to find something to do, you should get in touch with Muktuk Marston and help him get his story written down. And I thought that sounded pretty good. And I did get in touch with him, and he'd already written a couple of chapters of his book, I think, that had appeared in the National Guard magazine, or I'm not sure which magazine. But he thought that was a good idea, too. And so I took a tape recorder up to his apartment and sat there for several weeks trying to sort of encourage him to talk about different parts of his experience getting the Guard started. And, of course, it was totally new to me. I had no idea, and it was pretty exciting to hear about all these exploits. Of course, I believed everything he told me. And after tape recording these things, then I transcribed them and submitted them back to them. And I guess he, you know, sent him sort of helped him complete the book. Boy, it was a lot of fun. And
wow, you know, that explains a lot, you know, because that's the way the book reads. It really has this, you know, guy sitting back and just talking sort of feel to it very often.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, he had written a couple of chapters, as I said, and I didn't realize that, but he got talking about finding Jade Mountain and taking Joey Brown out to St. Lawrence Island forming the Royal Usyk Society and peeing on the ropes to tie the plane down because the wind was blowing so hard. And just having a wonderful time remembering all the things that he'd done. And he said, of course, he was very enthusiastic about giving guns and ammunition to these folks out in the villages. He knew they needed it for hunting. And of course, they loved it, too. And he was very quick to admit that it probably, you know, a lot of young people and even women were signed up.
Yeah.
So it was just lots of fun to meet him. And he was a grand fellow. I felt really lucky to get that little bit of Alaska history through him.
Amy, that was great. I mean, what Alaskana is in that? I mean, just you're talking about, you know, peeing on the ropes and things like that. I mean, that's the real flavor of Alaska.
I felt pretty connected right away with the state after that.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the Alaska Territorial Guard, and I did... whereas the Canadian historian Galen Paris was unable to join us on the program. He did, and he said, I don't know much about the ATG anyway, but he did chime in and say, well, no, there was also something called the BC Rangers, which still exists and was pretty much the same thing, except it was in Canada. And they're still at it. And he said that he thought it was probably because of pressure from Governor Ernest Greening that got the funding from the war effort, from the federal war effort. And of course they probably had those old Enfields still sitting around.
Yes, exactly.
So Mercedes, you gonna go out to Bethel on the 3rd?
Well, I kind of double booked, but I'm hoping to do that. Yes, we'll see how that plays out. I know we have several people from the department that are planning on being there as well.
All right, well, that's good. So, Dave, congratulations on pulling that thing off.
Well, it's a team effort, Steve, and certainly this. If I could send one message statewide. This is about volunteerism. Fall on the ATG, serving our country. If you send us some rocks, this can become a statewide project and a statewide history lesson about what these folks did. We're 70 years late, but better late than never.
Well, Dave, we still have a couple of minutes, and you're the one that told me about the balloon thing, which turned out to be a really great subject for discussion here, and indeed prompted a call from an ATG veteran down in Petersburg telling us just an amazing story. So you told me a couple of other things that ATG members did that you knew about that they were told, and I thought maybe you might want to go into those, sort of setting up decoys and things like that so that aerial reconnaissance, Japanese aerial reconnaissance, would think that there were gun emplacements and even troops.
Absolutely. Thank you. I've lived here many years, and people have told me hundreds of stories about ATG over the years. One of the amazing things, people took driftwood, large pieces of driftwood, and planted them in the ground to look like an artillery piece.
All right, thanks, Dave. We're out of time. I want to thank Bertie and Mercedes for being with us. Next week on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority supports a statewide system of care for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, chronic alcoholism and substance abuse, Alzheimer's, and traumatic brain injury. You probably know a trust beneficiary, a family member, friend, co-worker, neighbor, maybe you. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, here for all Alaskans. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.